Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
We are having a great conversation with Jeremy Peters, New York Times correspondent, who's written a great book that really kind of goes beyond where a lot of the other Trump books have gone. He's sort of just taking the path less trod, and that is, hey, let's look at some of the things and the people and the players that kind of led up to Trump, and how that has set the new tone for the GOP. The book is Insurgency, How Republicans Lost Their Way and Got Everything They Ever Wanted. It's interesting in some respects, this idea of, you know, the party and the man, and how there's a symbiosis between them, and having run the party, you know, as you detail it in points of the book, you know, my battles with the Rush Limbaugh, and then realizing that this guy really doesn't give a shit about this, because, you know, he's telling me one thing in our private conversations and going out on the air and blasting me for the very thing he told me. I got it. I am an entertainer. And he said so,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, and you dared to say so. Raked over the coals and almost tossed out of your job, 6 weeks in? And
yeah.
Because you dared to speak the truth.
I spoke the truth. I'm like, wait a minute, dude, I'm quoting him. Go back and look at the videotape. But it does it does say a lot about that sort of evolution of the party, and how it finds itself going into this upcoming cycle. With this insurgency still roiling inside of it in many, many respects. The question now is, who are the new insurgents going to be? Mm-hmm. What do they look like? Do you have an assessment on that?
Yeah, I do, and I don't think you're going to like the answer, but the one obvious person to point to for a prototype is the Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
And I think you have to really question, is this Donald Trump's party still, or is it Marjorie Taylor Greene's party? And she has this thing where she says, and I've heard her say it on podcasts and in interviews with you, I am the voter. And you know what? Like, she's right. She's closer to the voter, the base voter, at least, of the Republican Party in a lot of ways than Trump is, with not just the denial of reality, but, you know, the kind of the anti-science stuff that the really kind of vile anti-Semitic QAnon stuff.
I was going to say, but folks realize Trump, she's dumb as a bag of rocks. I mean,
it doesn't seem to matter. They don't see her that way. I would put it that way. I think that it's they look at her as an extension of that same kind of, she's not one of them. She's one of us,
right?
And she's not part of this. Well,
so what does that say about us? What does that say about us?
I mean,
if this is your avatar, what does that say about you? I mean, it goes, you pick and choose your leaders. And as I always like to say, your leaders are an extension of who you are, right? Mm-hmm. So if you support a Ronald Reagan, if you're out there for Ronald Reagan, that says something about you. If you're Marjorie Taylor Greene, Trust me, that says something about you. So you don't get to split the baby. You don't get to do that and say, I'm a little bit of Reagan, I'm a little bit of Marjorie. No, you're not.
And you're getting it the same. It's the same mistake that the Republicans in 2009 made about the Tea Party, right? We can govern with these people. We can be both. We can be a little bit insurgent, a little bit establishment, and get things done. Like, I'm sorry.
I will raise my hand, Jeremy, and admit that was my thinking at the time, because I didn't want, I was watching them take out my leaders in races that I knew no Republican could win except for Mike Castle in Delaware, right?
Yep, and you were right.
Yeah. Or Bennett in Utah, right? So so as a chairman, I'm sitting there going, okay, I got to stop the hemorrhaging, and I've got to figure out what this is, and I've got to figure out how to work with it, because I can't eradicate. I don't have time to eradicate it. I'm trying to rebuild the party after getting its ass kicked in 08 and in 06. And 06 was devastating, right? And and so you're absolutely right in that assessment of how the party looked at this moment, and not as clearly probably as we should have, which I thought would be the case over time, because the thing to keep in mind, the Tea Party of 2009, 2010, 2011-ish is not the same Tea Party of 2013, 14, 15. It morphed and moved from these constitutional things into rallies with Nazi signs. And some will say, well, you know, it was always there, it just wasn't prominent. I would disagree with that, but you're right about your assessment of the mistake in understanding exactly what the trend line was for this movement.
And that's where I think this this book is not the beginning of the story, it's not the end of the story. We're somewhere in the middle, and where these chapters have all ended is with the far hard right insurgent wing always destabilizing the leadership to the point where a new insurgency takes power. A newer insurgency overthrows the leadership. And are we at that point? I don't know. Does Donald Trump can you out crazy Donald Trump? Like, yeah, I think he can. And I think that you're seeing a lot of that happen right now. Can he control it? I think he believes that he can, but it might have already gotten too far away from him. And I think that's what we're going to be looking at going into the next 2, 3, 4 years. If he runs, which I think he probably will, and if Republicans take back power in the House, which they probably will, is this controllable? And history would tell us it's not.
It's not. No, it's no. There's no example in history that shows where, when the insurgency actually gets what they want, that everything gets better after that. It just doesn't happen. So that then leaves me with, you know, the likes of a Denver Riggleman or a Joe Walsh, who particularly in the case of Walsh did that arc of change, you know, hardcore. I remember Joe, I helped him get elected, right? Joe Walsh running and, you know, as a Tea Party insurgent. And very much a hard edged guy. Now, one of the biggest anti-Trumpers, and it says, I don't know what the hell I was thinking. I was wrong.
Yeah.
How much more of that do you see happening? How much more of that can we expect? Do you see some of these Trump sycophants? And then probably to your earlier point will be too late, but then coming around going, oh, no, this is too much. I can't do this.
Well, I think I'm glad you mentioned Joe Walsh, because one of the things he told me about when he ran and won, surprisingly, shockingly, he didn't expect to win. The Republicans didn't expect him to win in Washington, right?
I did. We pegged his race. I can give you backstory on that one too. The NRCC, these guys dropped so many balls in 2010.
That was one of them.
Yeah.
They didn't even have a number for him on election night. How to get in touch with them? The NRCC. So anyway, my point is that like one of the things he said to me about what he learned early on was that it didn't matter if he opposed the leadership and picked fights with Cantor and Boehner, because he could go on Fox News and talk about it. And that was what mattered in his district. So I think it's a question of the incentive structure for these politicians on the Trump hard right at the moment. Like, what is their incentive structure? It's to get media attention and to raise money. And they've been doing that. And as long as they can go on Steve Bannon's podcast or, you know, Fox News or, you know, OAN or wherever, I mean, the media outlets have kind of multiplied, since 2010, as long as they're going to be popular with their people there and have a way to speak to them there, where there are no boundaries, where the culture is about being provocative and unapologetic and outrageous, then this is only just halftime. Like I said, like, I don't know where it ends.
So how culpable are you, my friend? The media, not you personally, obviously, but the media plays a pretty extensive role in all of this as well. And I think a lot of times people look at it from just the political parties and what the parties are doing or failing to do. And, you know, you're not containing your nuts over there and you're not, you know, lifting up the brave souls over here. But the media is the one who is actually setting the narrative, because that all of that crazy doesn't get covered unless it's covered. And so how do you assess in your book the role of the media? I know how you do. I want you to tell us, of the role that they play in sort of creating and backfilling in many respects some of the noise that we now are having to live with.
So, you know, I think one question is, or have we overcorrected for not seeing him coming in 2015? Are we similarly, and I've heard people raise this question, and I admit I don't know the answer, are we similarly now giving him too much credit and assuming that he has too much power over his voters? That's a question that can be answered with like more thorough reporting about what is actually moving voters. It's hard ultimately to tell, because this culture right now for Republicans is just all about being against the left more than anything else. And Trump is so good at that and so good at embodying that. And that was his thing all along. Like Newt Gingrich said, Trump's not a conservative. He's just anti-left. I think
for a guy who supported Hillary Clinton, that's not bad. But anyway,
right. So good. Fair enough. But it's like, it's so much of this, and this is what I get into, you know, one of the biggest themes in the book is how, you know, the three-legged stool of the Republican Party, where you had the fiscal conservative, the social conservative, and the military hawk, has been, you know, there's now a fourth leg there that's all about attitude. It's like stylistic conservative. And that's what Trump has given us. That's his legacy, is that it doesn't really matter so much what you believe is what you say and how you say it.
Style over substance.
So I think that the media has to kind of get outside of its own head there and stop asking questions that no one cares about. The average voter doesn't care. Like, I remember once listening to a podcast about, you know, after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, and, you know, these journalists are calling up voters, what do you think about, how's this going to affect your vote? And of course, the answer was, it wasn't going to affect their vote. But it's like, so journalists oftentimes, they get so caught up on what they read on Twitter, or, you know, what they're hearing and kind of these feedback loops in Washington and New York. And I'm guilty of this too, because I didn't think that Donald Trump would win. But I was wrong. And I think what that taught me was that like groupthink is a really dangerous thing in journalism and in politics. And it's bad for our democracy too.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
All right, America. You asked for it. Or maybe you didn't. But either way, we have to talk. You're just in kind of a crazy place right now, Mr. and Mrs. USA. So, we are going to sit down a couple of times a week and work it out between us. The way Americans do. On a podcast. Hosted by Beowulf Rocklin. Weird name. Weird news. Weird politics. Weird country. Facepalm America. Listen to Facepalm America, a podcast that laughs at America and its politics, from Beowulf Rocklin, producer of The Rick Unger Show. Facepalm America, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever you download your digital distractions in audio form.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at TraceMinerals.com.